on the witness stand. Mr. Powers, you may do your portion of the cross.
Thank you, Special Masters. And I'm going to... Good afternoon, Dr. Fumbone.
Good afternoon.
My name is Tom Powers, and along with Mike Williams, I represent the Mead and King families as well as the Petitioner Steering Committee. I want to focus my questions specifically on the testimony that you gave regarding the two individual cases here, that of Jordan King and William Mead. And just as you began, I'll talk about Jordan's case first. But before getting into that, if I recall, you were here during Dr. Lord's, Professor Lord's testimony?
Yes.
And at one point, Professor Lord testified about the importance of parental accounts and the thorough histories that a parent would give. Do you recall that testimony?
Yes.
Would you agree with Professor Lord that detailed parental accounts, often prompted by questions, provide the most reliable historical information upon which to base assessments of regression and the onset of autistic symptoms?
No. I agree if you are asking that retrospectively, that's the best source. Now, there would be other ways to study regression or loss of skills in the developmental course of autism by conducting very tightly controlled prospective studies of high-risk samples, like if
right. But what we're talking about here in these two cases are obviously retrospective,
okay.
Correct?
Yeah. So retrospectively, yes, I would think that asking parents would be the best source available, although doesn't mean free of bias.
And when you say free of bias, what are you referring to?
All sort of evidence in psychiatry. In psychiatric studies, show when you interview people about their past experiences that you can have a lot of recall biases occurring. So, for instance, in psychiatry, dating the onset of symptoms has been a problem in research for decades, and that's why we use sometimes lifetime estimates. I don't want to get into details, but it's known in psychiatric epidemiology that when you try to interview people and reconstitute their life trajectories in terms of symptoms or episodes of disorders, it's very hard to actually get to an accurate picture when you compare to contemporaneous records or other informants interviews. So it's not an area which is easy, but there have been some techniques of interviewing which have been devised to improve the accuracy of recall, but it's not perfect.
Yeah, certainly recognizing it's not perfect, but the parental history combined with the opportunity to examine contemporaneous medical records, given that we can't travel back in time and relive the experience, is the most reliable way that we can go about reconstructing these histories. Is that correct?
I would agree with you.
Okay. Now, let's talk about Jordan King in particular. In your expert report on page 61, and I should ask you, do you have that report in front of you?
Yes.
On page 61, at the very top of that page, see if we can pull it up here in a second, that very first paragraph, it begins on the preceding page, but that first paragraph up at the top, which would be paragraph 137 continued, let's go ahead and highlight. Now, if you recall, Dr. Fumbone, this is a developmental services interview that was conducted when Jordan was 26 months old. Is that correct?
Correct.
And what you're referring to here is Mylinda King's, that's Jordan's mother, giving an account of Jordan's development. So she's giving this account at a point when Jordan is 26 months old, correct?
Correct.
And she describes retrospectively that he used single words at about 1 year of age and then stopped. Now, when she testified, were you here for that or did you listen to it?
I listened to the audio recording.
So, and did you hear her on redirect when she came up and clarified a note in the medical record about when Jordan stopped talking relative to his having words at 1 year? Do you recall that discussion?
Not specifically.
Well, Mrs. King testified that There had been a note in the medical record that Dr. Rust identified saying that Jordan spoke at 1 year and then stopped. Dr. Rust was implying that Jordan stopped speaking at 1 year. Mrs. King clarified that he stopped speaking well after 1 year, but before age two. Do you remember that?
No, I don't recall that, but that's what I would have understood.
Okay. So at age 26 months, Mrs. King, as you understand it, is not saying that Jordan lost his words at 1 year of age, but he had words at 1 year of age and lost them later. Is that your understanding?
That's what I understood initially.
She also described him having multiple words, juice, shoe, up and down, I believe, that he could say cat and dog. Do you recall that he had at least four or five words by the age of 12 months?
Yes, I recall mama, hot, daddy, shoes, bubbles, mailbox, tiki.
And you recall
five, six words, yeah.
Yeah. And you recall her testimony that he started using those words a little bit before 1 year of age and continued using that words past 1 year of age, correct?
Yes.
And that he used those words appropriately, that is, in context. He wasn't calling his breakfast cereal a mailbox. He was talking about the mailbox when he said mailbox, correct?
Yes, yeah.
So you have described in discussing regression, this criteria of having at least five words and using them regularly for at least 3 months. So from the evidence that's come in Jordan King's case, it certainly sounds as if he had at least these five words, five or six words, and perhaps more words, and used them for a period of several months. Isn't that correct?
No, I mean, that's an inference that you made. I want to be the devil's advocate here. He has, based on Mrs. King's testimony and the records, let's say five, six, seven words at age 12 months, fine. Now, you need to assess the quality of the use of the words. In the definition that we use, we need to be sure that these words are used spontaneously. And that's a qualifier which is extremely important because many, many parents and autistic children start to develop words, but they don't use them spontaneously. So they just copy or they echo their parents. So the parent says, horse, this is a horse, and then the child repeats horse. This is not counted as spontaneous communication. So you need to assess the quality and the functionality of these words. Are they used spontaneously? And in his case, if we were to follow the ADI definition that we discussed previously, we would need to ascertain that he was using these five or six words daily for at least 3 months before having lost them for another period of 3 months, which we cannot do, I think, based on the existing record.
And there's certainly nothing in the record that indicates that the words he's using were non-spontaneous. There's no indication that this is echolalia. In fact, Mrs. King testified that he used words spontaneously and in context. That was her testimony.
Yes, and that he was pointing as well. So I'm not disputing that, but I think we need to apply the full definition that we use. We would need more data that we do not have. But I agree with you based on my own opinion about this, the testimony and the clinical records, that he had words and that he lost them at a later point.
And not only did he have words, I mean, words, I think Dr. Lord testified about this also, word count is but one manifestation of language skills or communication skills, correct?
Yes.
And she actually testified that word count may not be the most important, particularly for toddlers, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you're saying yes,
yes,
but the court reporter is going to need to know
yes.
that. Now, the testimony that we heard from Melinda King was that Jordan used all sorts of other ways to communicate well into his second year of life, pointing, gesturing, grabbing his shoes and bringing them when he wanted to go outside. You remember all of that testimony.
Yes.
And all of those are communication skills, particularly for a toddler. They may not be words, but those are skills in the communication or language domain that a toddler would expect to be demonstrating by that age, correct?
Yes, but again, I'm sorry, I don't want to be... what matters is the quality of these gestures. Let's take the example of pointing, for instance. Many children with autism do point, but they point for expressing needs. So that's a kind of pointing that we call proto-declarative. So if they want biscuits, they would point at the biscuits like this. But there is a type of pointing that they don't do, which is pointing at a distance. So if I talk to you, I say, Mr. Powers, look there. I'm pointing at this object. I look at it. I point with my finger. I speak, and I check back that you are following my point. This is a different type of pointing, which is social communication. And in records, or when parents report their observations, if you ask the question, did your child point? Yes, you're likely to have a yes. But if you give me examples in which context was he pointing, what type of pointing was present, then you start to make a differentiation about the type of pointing which is often deficient in autism, which preserves another types of pointing, which is what I said.
But
I'm just saying that, and the same for bringing the shoes, all sort of gesture, they can be used functionally to express needs. What the quality that we want to see and that we evaluate, even retrospectively, is whether or not they are used in sort of toing and froing manner with the partner of the interaction. This is the key aspect which defines autism.
And certainly Mrs. King talked about interactions that she had with Jordan. You recall her testimony about specific instances when he would want to play, he could encourage her to play, and he would see whether she was responsive or not. I mean, all of these things she testified to. I didn't see anything in your report. I didn't hear anything on direct either, indicating that Jordan was deficient in these, in sort of the non-word communicative skills. I certainly didn't, like I said, I didn't see anything in the section of your expert report. So are you claiming that Jordan had poor quality social communication skills apart from word count?
No, it's hard to gauge. What I'm saying is that at age 12 months, it seemed to had 5 words to communicate already in context. So if so, you would expect that this child in the next 6 months would have developed more language.
Okay? And you say that he didn't, and if you look, it's paragraph 138, and there's a sentence that begins, there is not much evidence.
Sorry, where is it?
There is not much evidence. If we could highlight that. And just that entire sentence.
Yes.
And keep going, please, on the highlight. Now, when you wrote your report, obviously, you hadn't heard my Linda King offer any testimony. Do you recall in her testimony that she described Jordan using additional words between the ages of 12 months and 18 months?
And not precisely, but...
And when you say that his pediatrician's notes are remarkable for their lack of reference, that it sounds like you're saying because the pediatrician wasn't keeping track of the number of words that Jordan had, that we can infer from that Jordan was not progressing. Is that what you mean to say there?
Yeah, I probably should remove that statement because I agree with you. Usually in a pediatric record, you would not have at the beginning of language development, consistent documentation of progress. But often pediatricians note babbles, first words, and I didn't find evidence of that in a pediatrician record. So I probably use that indirect type of evidence to support that, but it's not a strong statement which I made.
Right, and in fact, at this 12-month checkup, he was noted to be babbling. And so it's more likely that a pediatrician would have noted the absence of words, affirmatively noticed the absence of words in a child who had been babbling.
No.
that's a better inference that one could draw.
I don't think my experience is not consistent with that. You have a lot of children who do not have any words by when they should have them, and the pediatricians do not document that always.
In this 12 to...
Sorry. No, they wait.
In this 12 to 18 month window, do you recall how many visits he made to a pediatrician?
No, not exactly.
One of the visits was an emergency room visit for a high fever. Do you remember that?
Yes, I think I've seen that, yeah.
So if a child is being treated for a high fever and a viral infection and is febrile and lethargic, it's not surprising that a pediatrician wouldn't be making notes about how many words that child has or doesn't have, correct?
Yes. That's mentioned in my report in section 133.
Now, if we go down to the bottom, there's a sentence that begins, although it appears likely. If we can highlight that entire rest of the page. There's a phrase in here that says, it is probable that his development was not normal before the loss at 18 or 20 months of age. In the preceding paragraphs, the only indication that I saw that would support that is the statement that you've already said you shouldn't put in, that you shouldn't have put in there about his pediatrician not noting additional words. What is the basis for saying that it is probable his development was not normal before 18 months of age? What's the basis in the evidence for your making that statement?
It's trying to combine all the information which comes here and there in the record. And if you look at what you started with it, which is when the mother completed a questionnaire, at the end of my section 137, when he was 26 months of age, she's then asked to document the language development in her child. And what she says, he used single words around 1 year of age and then stopped. So there was clearly used some words, and what we know is that there were just a few words, not complex sentences, and that it doesn't seem to have progressed in his language development up to the point of losing more complex language.
So, my question is, where in the record can you point to evidence that he did not develop more than those 5 or 6 words between 12 months and 18 months? Where can you document that in the record here?
Well, again, I assume that a child who starts single words and have 5 or 6 words by age 12 months would have developed more words, combinations of 2 words by age 18 months, and there is no reference to that at the time of the loss. The loss is described as a loss of few words. No, that's all. So there seems to have been no progression in the complexity of language structures between 12 months of age and 18 months of age. These are single words at the beginning and single words which were lost. So it doesn't seem to be really following the course of language development over a 6-month period in a child who is already having 5, 6 words.
And even though Mrs. King said he did develop more words between the ages of 12 and 18 months.
Oh, he might have developed more words. Again, the issue is whether or not the quality of the use of these words was communicative, spontaneous, and not solely used to express needs, for instance, which would be a typical... there is that type of pattern of language development and loss of a few words is quite prototypical of what I see in my clinic all the time. It's not something which is unusual. So the loss of skills occur at the age 18 months is often the age at which actually parents report the loss of skills, 16 months, 18 months, 20 months. And usually these are a few words which have been there for several months with a lack of progress in language complexity and communication, reciprocal communication in the months which precede. So you have a sense that there has been a sort of progressive onset of the symptoms and then a loss which... is usually accompanied with other symptoms.
Now, there are 2 other primary domains that you'd be looking at. We're done with this particular page, Scott. There is, we've been talking about communication. I also want to talk about social reciprocity. I didn't see any discussion in your report that directly addressed, at least that I saw explicitly, the social interactions that Jordan was having before 18 months of age. I mean, obviously, you do talk about things that happened at 20 months and 24 months and 26 months. Did you see anything in the medical records or hear anything from Mrs. King's direct testimony indicating that there were deficits in social reciprocity in Jordan before the age of 18 months?
It's very hard to actually assess, again, the quality of the social interactions. If I recall well, she mentioned, and I don't know exactly the timing of it, but that he welcomed his sister. He has a younger sister, I think, Maya, that he kissed at the beginning, but then she also mentioned that he was ignoring her in a certain number of occasions. And I don't exactly know. I think it was around 14 or 15 months of age.
Well,
you know, that's sort of
14 or, let me clarify, 14 or 15 months of whose age?
Of Jordan, of course.
Because Maya was born, I believe, when Jordan was 15 months old. And so Jordan would have been at least 15 or 16 months old before he would have had any opportunity to interact with his sister, correct?
Yes, maybe. I'm sure she was describing the time when the baby came back at home, but it's just noted in my note from the audio of the testimony of Mrs. King, so that's something which might be a flag, but it's not a definite information either, I agree.
And certainly there's nothing that you can point to specifically that happened before Jordan turned 18 months old that would indicate he had deficiencies in the social reciprocity domain. Because, again, I didn't see any that were described in your report.
No, because you would not ordinarily find that in medical records. I mean, descriptions of social reciprocity would be, or social interactions would be unusual, and their quality could not be usually assessed from medical records. So
the only thing we would have to rely on is Mrs. King's testimony, and there's no reason you would have to doubt the veracity and the truthfulness of her testimony, correct?
Yes, and there are also the video which I reviewed, which I don't think would change my opinion that there is a likely progressive onset before.
I'm sorry, I couldn't understand the last.
That there is a likely progressive gradual onset of symptoms up to the age of 18 months.
And when do you see that, in your opinion, as beginning? When did that gradual onset of symptoms actually begin, in your opinion?
I would have really to be careful about dating that. It's very hard, but I need probably to go back to my notes. My notes of the videos, probably, if you want me to go back to that.
Well, just to the best of your
I seem to recall that around 15 months of age, 16 months of age, there were some observations that suggested that he was not really responding to his mother's comments easily or spontaneously, that he seemed to be more absorbed. It was a very gradual change. And you could see as well that, for instance, where he was 10 months, 12 months, he was a child with really good eye contact, smiling, responding. And you see that a very subtle change in his social functioning in terms of becoming more serious, giving less eye contact, responding less well. The timing of that, I need to check on the video if it's critical. But I think it's, we could all agree with that. It's not.
Now there's another domain that involves play, imaginative play, and play with toys. You recall Mrs. King testifying that well into Jordan's second year, he played very appropriately with toys, the tool set. And he would actually use tools as tools, helping his father build musical instruments. Do you recall that testimony?
Yes.
You recall that continued well into his second year, to at least up to the age of 18 months, correct?
I don't recall that in particular, but I'm happy to take you.
And you recall that she testified that at some point after that, he stopped playing with toys appropriately, and instead of using tools as tools or trains as trains, would line them up and sort of fixate on those objects. Do you recall that testimony?
Yes, and he drew over and over in a repetitive fashion, and he was starting humming, and yes.
Exactly, and I was just going to get to that.
Tiptoe walking.
Right about that same time, these symptoms of stereotypical behavior emerged again, sometime after 16 or 18 months of age. She described that in a sequence actually beginning at age 18 months and going to age 19 months. She described the sequence of some toe stepping and then hand flapping, and then to the point that, you know, going down the slide, he would very vigorously flap his arms. Do you recall she described that as happening between 18 and 20 months of age?
Yes, that's consistent with my notes. Yeah.
And there's nothing in the record to indicate that any of those behaviors were apparent before that 18-month, roughly 18-month time period.
Yes, no, it's okay. Yeah, I agree.
So it's fair to say that Jordan King actually developed skills in all three developmental domains and then lost those skills, correct?
Yes. Yes, so certainly that he had skills in terms of play and social interactions and communication that he certainly lost at one point. Again, that doesn't mean that when before the loss was obvious that he was absolutely developing normally. I think that would be an inference that I would not follow.
Now we're going to talk about William Mead's case.
Yeah. Can I also just for instance, just in terms of the quality of the language was in Jordan, there is this note by the father, I think it's the father who says in a written documentation in the records that with hindsight, when they looked back, that he had worse by 10 or 12 months of age, but he was never a talker.
And he actually, that was a comparison he made to his sister, Maya.
Yeah.
And you also recall that Mrs. King testified that Maya was somewhat precocious verbally. Do you recall that?
Yes. Yes.
And so it's not necessarily a sign that a child is abnormal or slow in his or her development if they're not keeping up with the precocious sibling. I mean, that's not a fair conclusion to reach, is it?
Yes. Well, we would have to see if she was really precocious. Girls tend to speak earlier than boys in general, so that would not be a surprise.
But I just want to make clear that's what you're talking about. That was the context where it came up. It was a comparison of Jordan to his sister.
Yes.
And looking at where they were at a particular age.
Mm-hmm.
And so girls speak more at that age, so you wouldn't expect Jordan in comparison to be speaking as much as she did. And they also described her as particularly precocious verbally, right?
It can be argued in different ways. Just, I think it matches my clinical experience when you see patients and parents at age 2 or 3 when the full picture emerges, then parents make retrospective assessments of very subtle difficulties that they did not pick up at the time because it's very subtle. And they say, now that I know, so I remember that when he was pronouncing his first words, they were actually unusual words, or they were said in a sort of non-communicative way, or there was no, the internet, it was not directed at me. So there are very subtle abnormalities in the social communication of young children with autism, which are reported with hindsight by parents once they know that the difficulties are...
Oh, I understand that, and that's what you're telling me about other cases, but what I'm asking you is about this case, and that is not what Jordan's father described, and that is not what his mother described, is it?
That's what the father wrote in the note. He said it was never... I don't know, you have to check on where it was.
He described this whole, the lack of...
He said he was never a babbler.
And
he was never a babbler is a consistent description of the children who develop with autism when they are infants. They often do not babble.
Yeah. And I was just trying to distinguish where your commentary picked up and where Mr. King's note in the record left off and where Mrs. King's testimony left off. All they said was that compared to his sister at the same age, Jordan was not a babbler. That's all that the record says, correct?
It's correctly said, Jordan was never a babbler, full stop. And then it follows, his vocalizations were fairly limited compared to her articulation. So,
Her articulation, yeah.
Yeah, so then okay. The comparative statement. You know,
so that's all I was trying to establish. who said what and what was your commentary versus the parent's testimony and the note in the records. So now we will talk about William Meade. Okay. Now, William Meade, you would agree, had a pretty fair repertoire of words by the time he was 18 months old. Would you agree with that? That he was using two-word phrases? Do you recall George Meade testifying that he would say, up daddy, down daddy, let's go? Do you recall that testimony?
Yes, I remember that dad said that he was even speaking in three-word sentences at age 12 months, which is quite difficult to actually believe. And again, I want to point out that retrospective parental accounts are notoriously difficult to evaluate, particularly in terms of the timing. So I'm not saying more than that. It's not a comment about Mr. Meade's testimony, but it seems that in the document of about William, we see sometimes he had 60 words that he lost, and then in other areas it's more like much more simple words that he had. So there is inconsistency both of the extent to which he had fully developed language at the time he lost his skills, and there is also inconsistency about the dates. The dates in the records, I mean, these are prospectively recorded times, are inconsistent in the medical record. And even if the testimony now says something else, I think the whole picture in terms of timing of these milestones, in terms of getting new skills or losing some skills, is very complex. I mean, it's a complex issue for us as clinicians and researchers, and I think the whole picture is not very clear. That's what I would say.
And in reading your expert report, the focus that you seem to have were what you saw as inconsistencies in the record between the age of 18 months and between the age of roughly 2.5 years of age. And trying to place that, just the sense I got from your report is that you were trying to figure out whether his regression would be placed at 18 months or 24 months or 27 months. Is that a fair summary of this couple of pages devoted to William?
Yes, I mean, could you point at me about specific paragraph?
No, that's what I was just wondering, if that was your general sense, because I don't want to just read the whole report to you out loud.
No, I think there are, when I was trying to evaluate the timing of the, I agree that there is a loss of skills or a change in William, a loss of skills. That's not an issue. The issue is when it happened. Was there a discrete time where the loss could be evident, or was it more a gradual process where there was like lack of progress in critical skills followed by the loss of some skills which were acquired before? So I think that is very difficult to evaluate, as it is very difficult to evaluate the actual timing of that loss. So, you know, in some records, it mentions the summer 2000 as being a critical time where the parents really realized. So that's really the upper limit in terms of their realizing the difficulties. Then you can go back. There is a mention, which unfortunately is not very well documented, that he went to daycare, probably at the beginning of the school year of 1999 when he was 17 months, and he was asked to leave the daycare because he was not fitting in, and that's a strong indication that he was not normal, and that seems probably to have occurred before the 18 month or the 2 years before 2 years of age. So,
what I want to focus on is the 18 months, because I think Mr. Meade did testify that even in looking at medical records, he said, looking back now, retrospectively, speaking about himself and William's mother, he said, we now realize that there were some signs at the age of 18 or 19 months. I mean, he said that on direct. So he acknowledges that things were beginning to appear around 18 or 19 months. So I would offer that to resolve any dispute about whether Mr. Meade is claiming 27 months or 24 months. He is saying retrospectively that 18 months is when he first he and William's mom first saw problems. Do you recall that testimony from George Meade?
Yes.
Have you been able to identify anything from the medical records indicating that William Meade was deficient in any language or communication skills before the age of 18 months.
Before the age of 18 months?
Correct.
I don't think so.
Are you aware of anything in the medical records or in the testimony of Mr. Meade indicating that William Meade was deficient in any of the social skills or deficient in social reciprocity in any demonstrable way before the age of 18 months?
No, not in a... No, no. I'm based on my notes of his... No.
Are you aware... I'm sorry, were you done?
No, yes, yes.
Are you aware of anything in the contemporaneous medical records or the testimony of Mr. Meade indicating that William was deficient in the area of play, behavior, or imaginative play before the age of 18 months?
Not in his testimony.
So you can't identify anything in Mr. Meade's testimony or in the medical records indicating that William Meade was abnormal in his development before the age of 18 months?
Yes, but again, the fact that it's not there doesn't mean it was not there.
And part of your testimony in your report is that it might not have been there. So I want to know.
No. Based on medical records, I didn't see any evidence of that. I agree.
And then, based on his testimony, you didn't see any evidence of that either.
No, but I think the videos are showing slightly different pictures.
Have you did you testify about the videos?
No, but I reviewed them all, and I can look back at my notes. I'm pretty sure that there are clips where William's interactions are not particularly reciprocal, and the amount of language which is produced by him is actually extremely limited.
And this would be in video before he turned 18 months of age?
Oh, yeah.
Is there any doubt that William Meade lost skills in all three developmental domains at some point between the ages of 18 months and 27 months?
No, I don't dispute the fact that there was probably a loss of skills. For instance, the videos show that he had a couple of words that you hear, but that's about it. So there is about 12 months of age. So I heard two utterances, the spontaneity of which is uncertain, and the rest of it, I really... through a lot of footage, didn't hear language from that boy in circumstances where you would have expected more language to be produced to communicate. So that doesn't really contradict the fact that he might have lost skills and changed and developed autistic symptoms and lost social skills and play skills later. I agree with you.
And for William Meade, would you say that he definitely regressed?
And there was a loss of skills, yes, apparently, based on what we are discussing today. I have no problem with that.
So you have no problem saying that William Meade definitely regressed?
Well, what do you mean by definitely regress?
Well, it's a term that I heard you use earlier today.
Yes, but... That was a technical term of the ADI, so that he experienced a loss of skills. I do not dispute that. That's for sure. Okay, that's what I say. That his development was normal before, I'm not sure.
But you would say he definitely, not just lost skills, he definitely regressed. And you agree with the autism diagnosis?
Yes.
And same with Jordan King?
Yes.
He definitely regressed, and he has an autism diagnosis, and you agree with that diagnosis?
Yes. They both lost skills as we, in the course of their second year of life, closer to the fourth semester of life. Closer to the second year of life, which is often what is seen. But you have a sense when you review the record and review the tapes that there was a gradual onset of symptoms over time, over a period of time. A time where there were also loss of skills. Mm.
No other questions right now.
Redirect. Dr. Fambone, Mr. Williams, he began his cross-examination talking about
thalidomide and tributyline, some of the known medical causes of autism. And he said that the number was so small, and I think you acknowledged that the number of those cases, say cases caused by tributyline or cases caused by thalidomide, are so small that they may not be picked up by epidemiology. Do you recall that line of questioning?
Yes.
But in those cases, can we identify a specific phenotype of that we know what caused that autism?
Yes, in the case of congenital rubella, yes, you can suddenly identify symptoms of congenital rubella in addition to symptoms of autism. So,
do we have that same ability with regard to regressive autism? Can we identify a distinct phenotype of regressive autism as compared to all other autism?
No. As I said before, as Dr. Lord said, it's not a phenotype which is associated with clinical characteristics or familial characteristics or course or response to treatment, which would that factors that we usually use, again, in psychiatry to validate different types of syndromes. So.
There was also a lot of questioning with regard to prevalence rates and incidence rates, and there was some confusion. Would you please state again what is meant by the term prevalence rate?
Prevalence is just like it's a photograph of a particular population at a particular point in time, and then you count the number of people in the population, and that's your denominator. And then of these population, you count those who are affected by the disease, and then you put them in the numerator. So you can have 5% out of 100 who have blue eyes. That's the prevalence is 5%, and that's the way it is. So that's prevalence.
Is it a snapshot in time?
Yes, there is no, again, no passage of time. It's an instantaneous photograph of a situation at a given point in time.
And is that different than incidence rate?
Yes, that's the key difference, is that incidence involves the passage of time. So you start here and you finish there. And in this interval, you count the number of new cases of disease in the particular population, which is predefined at the beginning of the study period. That's the way you compute incidence. One of the confusion is that incidence can be expressed in complex incidence rates, where you have complex denominators which are difficult to interpret intuitively, like person-years denominators. That's pure incidence rate. There is a type of incidence rate which is like a prevalence because it's a proportion. And let me just explain. I don't know if it's... let's say, if you then follow 100 children from birth up to age 10, so you have the passage of time, and then you count those who develop a certain disease. So you can express the incidence of this disease as being 10 out of 100, which is your starting point. So you have 10% of this cohort, which at age 10 has the disease. That is an incidence figure, which is expressed as a proportion like prevalence rates. Hence, some proportions refer to what we call cumulative incidence, and some proportions refer to prevalence, proportional prevalence rate. So that's why you would see in graph sometimes percent as cumulative incidence. I'm sorry, it's a bit technical.
But studies, a prevalence study is different from an incidence study, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you were asked some questions about the Schechter and Grether study. Mm-hmm. Was that an incidence study or was that a prevalence study?
No, it's a prevalence study.
And what conclusions did the authors of the Schechter and Grether study come to with regard to prevalence of autistic spectrum disorders in the state of California?
Well, they in the state of California, they said that the prevalence is 46.5 per 10,000 in the cohort of children which were age 6 in their study, which is somewhat of an underestimate compared to other population rates. But otherwise, they provide proportion of new notifications in the age group 3 to 5. So these are prevalence which are adjusted over time.
And what do you conclude from that study with regard to the prevalence rate vis-a-vis thimerosal-containing vaccines?
That as the authors conclude themselves, they are very clear in their conclusions by saying that the phasing out of thimerosal-containing vaccines in California has led to no dip in the prevalence rates in the age group where we should see it. So if there was a connection, they should have seen a decrease in the prevalence after 2004. And the reason why is that they could have seen it is that in fact these numbers are high. As I said before, the DDS database adds, I think, about 3,000 new cases per year in their system. So if you have a risk factor which contributes to even 10% of the disease onset and it is removed, you should see a dip. Whatever is the trend, you should see a dip of 10%, and the trends will continue. But this was not seen.
Now, you were also asked a series of questions regarding your 2001 study that you published with Chakrabarty. It's filed as Respondents Master List 147 that looked specifically at regression. Do you recall that line of questioning?
Yes.
Now, was the focus of that study whether the children were entirely normal, or was the focus of that study whether the children actually had a regression?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
The focus of that study, was it whether or not these children were entirely normal before they developed autism, or was it whether or not they actually regressed?
No. The focus was just in estimating the proportion in two samples of children who experience a loss of skills in their development. That's all. This was not looking at definite regression after normal development. This was not at all the focus. The focus was just documenting a loss of skills in their development using an operationalized definition.
And there was some line of questioning as to what you meant by the phrase definite regression. What was meant by the phrase definite regression?
It was a higher level of definition. So for definite regression, again, the definite regression terminology has nothing to do with clearly regressive autism that we have been talking over the last few days. It was just, it's a way to say the child has lost his skills in a way which fulfills entirely the stringent criteria that you impose to document that loss. So he was using at least 5 words spontaneously, daily, with meaning for 3 months and then lost them for at least 3 months. That's what it means. That's all. It's a purely descriptive term. And probable was for those instances of loss of skills which were obvious but not meeting that stringent criteria.
Let me just interrupt, because that's exactly while we're on the topic, that's a question that I had, was you're referring to the standards there, meeting these stringent criteria. Is that to improve the concept of inter-rater reliability, that when you identify this definite set of loss, every professionals who refer to that and use these skills that know exactly what you're talking about, because everybody is consistently following or adhering to the same set of evaluation criteria?
Yes, at the time it was really to put clarity in this phenomenon and try to measure it in any sort of way, in a way which could be reliable across raters. Previous to that, we didn't have any ways to do that. But now all the studies on regression has evolved and have shown that we need actually to be less stringent. And if we are less stringent, for instance, this is too strict of a criterion, because you have some children who have a loss of quality in their babble, for instance. They suddenly change, they stop babbling. They babble well up to 9 months, and then suddenly there is something, their gaze is starting to be fixating at objects, and they stop babble, or they babble suddenly in a very monotonous way. So there is a change in quality, which is like a loss of skills. But this kind of early onset loss of skills or transformations would not be captured by our more stringent definition. So now the work of Dr. Lord or others is trying to be much more refined in documenting which skills are lost, and it becomes much more complex. And we see that as not being a categorical phenomenon. It's really a continuously distributed phenomenon. So there are different types of loss of skills at different times in the development, and it's how we are now conceptualizing these developmental trajectories in autism.
Thank you. And you were also asked by Mr. Powers a series of questions with regard to the two individual little boys who comprised this litigation. With regard to Jordan King, you were asked about loss of skills, onset. Is Jordan King's autism anything any different or unique from the children that you see in your clinic in Montreal?
No, not at all. Mm.
Is William Mead's autism different or unique compared to the children that you see in your clinic in Montreal?
Not based on the medical records of my review of the videotapes. It's very much the same.
Mm. Thank you.
Are we cross?
I'm checking with my colleague.
We're both shaking
our heads. No, all right. Nothing else from petitioners. Thank you.
Do other of my colleagues have any questions?
Been answered.
Let me just ask one doctor. Most of my questions actually have been answered. Pages 42 and 43 of your report, you could turn to them. And actually on page 42, at the beginning of paragraph 105, you talk about an ecological study in Quebec. It wasn't clear to me when I read the report which study you were talking about. Is this a published study?
Yes. That is the study I presented today as Fonbonne et al. Published in Pediatrics in 2006.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have.
All right. Then Dr. Fonbonne, I believe you're excused. Counsel, I take it we have nothing else for today.
That's correct.
Do we need to discuss anything off the record before we all break then?
No, ma'am.
All right. No, ma'am. Then we'll reconvene tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.